Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Bernard Hines, also known as the Laugh Therapist, a retired 20-year Army veteran battling PTSD. This clean comedian, motivational speaker, host, and radio personality delivers a healthy dose of comedy that fills your heart with laughter and your soul with joy. His style of comedy blends faith, humor, and mental health, consistently providing memorable, entertaining experiences that you'll carry with you long after he's left the stage. He has performed all over the world at numerous comedy clubs, churches, and veterans organizations. He is also the co-host of the Jamal Bates Morning Show, a syndicated urban inspirational morning show. Welcome, Bernard. It's great to have you on today.
Oh my goodness, it is great to be here. Thank you for having me. This is going to be great. I am on the show with Dawn. I have been trying to get on a show with Dawn. Oh my goodness. I've really been trying to get on a show so I can meet your son. But other than that, you know, he's a big football player. So I want to meet him and say, hey, how you doing? Take a picture with him. Everybody. But thank you. Thank you for having me today. Oh, my goodness.
I'm so excited to have you. I'm glad we're finally going to get the Laugh Therapist on the next two comedy show. So that's going to be amazing.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know why it took you so long. I told you I would cut the copay. I mean, you know, I know you didn't want to pay that copay to come get the therapist, but you got to pay the copay.
I know. Well, you know what? Great things come to those who wait. So there
come on
we go.
Now. Come on. That's what I'm talking about.
I am really excited to share with the laughers your story and just you. It's an incredible story. You're a war veteran who openly talks about your PTSD and the healing power of comedy. I'd really love it if you could share your story with the laughers and how it led to stand-up comedy.
Well, first of all, I want to make sure the people heard that right. It's PTSD, because most people only hear ST and D. So I just want to make sure that they hear this PTSD, not STD. You know, everybody can't.
That's a whole different show. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I just want to make sure people hear that. But this is awesome. I have always been what they call a barbecue comedian. You know what I'm saying? I was always the life of the party. I mean, from high school to the military. If you brought me in, I was the life of the party. I just never, people in my military organization told me, man, why are you not doing stand up? I was never felt I could be stand up or, you know, stand in front of people and do that. But one day when I was leaving Oklahoma, I was retiring, a lady in my church, she looked at me and she said, when you get to Virginia, you need to do comedy. My goodness. I'm battling PTSD. I'm leaving the military. I don't have a job lined up. But this right here, you want me to do comedy? So really, Dawn, laughter and comedy really saved my life. When I was at my lowest, I entered a comedy contest at the Funny Bone.
Okay.
And I really didn't know anything about comedy, how to set up a joke, the punchline. I just knew I'm going to talk about me and life. And I did it and I won.
Oh, my gosh. Right out of the gate.
Well, let me take that back. I lost the first time.
All right.
But the second time I came back, I won. I came in second. So I won. So that gave me some confidence.
Right.
So then I went and got me some comedy mentors, and the sky has been the limit. I mean, I am blessed to be able to just, you know, give back to, because as veterans, when you come back and you are diagnosed with a mental illness, you feel like I don't have anything left to give. You know what I'm saying? I did all this in the military. Now I got to come back and apply for a job when somebody 22, 23 years old interviewing me, asking me what I done. I done been to war. What you mean? What you done with your life? You know what I'm saying? So you sitting there. So I had to say, you know, this gave me my self-worth. Mm-hmm. And it might be crazy to some other people, but this was mine. You know, I've always been outspoken. I always wanted to make people laugh. And this is my therapy. This is my therapy that other people get to enjoy.
Yeah, that's really great. So are you self-taught in the stand-up comedy? You didn't take any classes or do anything like that? Or you just kind of...
I did take a class. Okay. I did take a class at the Funny Bone here in Virginia Beach. I took a class and I learned the nuances about comedy and, you know, how to deliver a joke, how to really write a joke. And, you know, because when I first started doing comedy, Don, if people wasn't laughing every second, I felt I wasn't funny. And as we know in comedy, sometimes you have to set up that joke.
Yep.
So it's like they're not going to be laughing. But I learned give them the anticipation of what's going to come. And then once I went through the class, I got a couple of mentors that really, you know, helped me and worked with me. And it's been great. But yeah, I have been a student of comedy. I will say that.
Yeah, that's really great. And you've been doing about 9 years now. Right.
It's been 11.
11. 11 years. Okay.
11 right. years. That's right.
That's right. We got that updated. That's good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. That's good.
Put it this way. Okay. We can say 9 years. 9 years when folks been paying. 11. You know what I'm saying? When people start paying, that's when you profession.
you give this man an inch, he takes a mile. I love it. It's so good. You know, if someone has never seen you perform before, how would you best describe what your comedy material is about and what they will experience?
Oh my God. Very energetic. And the crazy thing about it is the same anxiety that PTSD messes with me in my life is the same anxiety that PTSD messes with me on the stage. But I turn that energy, that negative energy, into my fuel. So on stage, I'm very animated. I speak about life. I'm in a blended family. I have 4 kids. One is in college. My mother-in-law lives with me. I have 2 dogs. My wife is going through menopause. I got a whole lot of stuff in my life that I talk about. And the main thing I like to talk about is what people in the audience can relate to. You know what I'm saying? I don't pick on anybody in the audience. I never go to a comedy show and just pick on somebody, because my thing is you came to see a show, not be the show. But I tell people, you're going to see yourself in all these jokes. You know, and of course, I give a shout out to my veterans. I talk about different military stuff. I just have a large range of what I can talk about because, you know, I've been through a lot. You know, I've been through what every person probably has been through. You know what I'm saying? I'm overweight. You know, my BMI is not the right size. You know, so it's like, you know, it's a whole lot of stuff. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I'm working on that, too.
There's a whole lot of stuff that we can. But. Yeah. You will leave a show with Vernard feeling like I was educated and I laughed. That's my goal. My goal is to make sure when you leave there, it has been an experience.
I agree. Have you ever worked in something that happened to you on the day of a show and brought it into your set that night?
Yes. Yes. My wife was supposed to go to one of my shows and we got into a little argument.
Okay.
And she said she wasn't going. Now, that was a time in my life when I needed my wife to be at every show because I didn't feel comfortable thinking I was funny. You know, that was just. So she was like my rah-rah person. So she was like, I'm not going. See how you do without me now. So I told the people when I got there, I said, listen, my wife usually come. So since she's not here, all the single women meet me in the back and take pictures. I'm going to post them on my social media so she can know if you don't come, I have groupies. So you have. I mean, because even when I do an event, I try to get there early. If it's like a private event, so I can scope the room and use something that's going on in the room or what's happening into my routine. because it makes people feel more personal
and connected.
And connected.
So how do you work then? Are you a kind of comic that writes out all the material and creates a set list and then works from that? Are you more an improv comic that kind of has it in his head and or an idea of what he wants to do and puts that on stage? How do you work as a comic?
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you like this. As I tell all my friends and all my, you are considered my friend now. When you're dealing with me, you're dealing with a veteran. You're dealing with a disabled veteran. So govern yourself accordingly. All my friends know. Listen, when you're dealing with me, no, my memory is not that good. And that's from the military. It's from my PTSD. My memory is not really that good. So what I do, I don't write out a whole joke. Okay. All throughout the week or all throughout my day, I am doing jokes in my mind. Because that's what I have to do. So I have a set list, but I just have one part of the word. So I know what that joke is. And I will go over it and look at it. And that's the good part about not having a joke that's tailored, because I have a couple of jokes that I can take to a comedy club. I can take to a church. I can take to a private function. I can take to a military organization, and I don't really have to change all the wording because that joke is meant to go anywhere. So that's why I try to write my jokes to where I can take them anywhere, because I know my limitations in my mental illness. You know what I'm saying? Now, I can improv and come off the top and stuff like that. I can do that, but I work to my strengths, not my limitations.
Now, that's pretty great. So figured out how to work with your own challenges and limitations.
Correct.
That's really
Correct.
Great.
Oh, because, I like that. Because when people pay you to do a show, they don't care about your limitations. They want you to be funny.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So I can't come to you and say, oh, Don, you know, I had a brain fart. No, you didn't. No. Give me my money back. You won't fund it. You know, so no. Yeah. So I have to make sure I take it seriously when people spend their hard-earned money to come to see me, or someone pays me to come. I make sure I study, because this is my full-time job.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I love that so much. Now, why do you call yourself the laugh therapist?
That's a great question.
Yeah, when did that happen, too, by the way? Why do you call yourself that, and when did you call yourself that in your comedy career? Like, at what point?
Okay, now all that ties together.
Okay, great.
Okay. Because at first I used to be called Slim.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Which I'm not. So
I know you're a big guy.
Say, you know, I go to church. So I should say I speak those things that be not as though they were. So I was Slim. Then I would change that name to Reverend Peanut Butter and Jelly. You can't take that name nowhere. Don't know, but you know, you can't put that on a flyer. You know what I'm saying? People are like, what are we gonna get with this guy? So I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was brainstorming because he was about to do my website. And he was telling me, he said, man, you got to get rid of that name. I said, what do you want me to do, man? I don't. He said, you got to get rid of that name. So we started brainstorming. And he said, well, you have PTSD. He said, besides church, what else got you through to where you feel like you can continue to go on with your life? I said, laughter and a therapist. He said, okay, don't you call yourself the laugh therapist? And when he said that, it was like a light bulb. I was like, I can take that name anywhere. And plus it will make me sound professional.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you say you're the laugh therapist, and what I say is I don't do comedy routine, okay? I do laugh therapy sessions.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so that has got me in the door at the VA hospital. That has got me into door at other mental hospitals, because they say, or military organization, we want you to come in and do a laugh therapy session. And all it is a comedy routine. But I always say laughter is a healthy dose of therapy.
Agreed.
That's one of my taglines. So that's how my name came about, by a friend of mine who was brainstorming. He told me I need to get rid of my other name because it's not going to take me nowhere. It's not going to go anywhere. So he gave me the laugh therapist, and I love it.
I think that's great. And when in your journey in your comedy career was that? Did I miss it?
2000. Okay, if I say 2000, in 2015.
Okay.
2015
great.
Is when Laugh Therapist was birthed.
That's really great. And I think it really ties in really well with your personal story and your mission.
Correct.
Because a big part of your message is killing the stigma surrounded around mental illness.
Correct.
What does that mean to you exactly? And how does that play out for you?
But now, I have lost a couple of friends by, you know, to suicide because of their PTSD and their stigma of going to get help, you know, thought they would lose their job and they would lose their security clearance. And, you know, people in the military would look down on their family. So I was like, you know what? I became an advocate because I do not mind letting folks know that I have PTSD and that what I battle with and what I go through, what my wife had to go through, understanding my PTSD. And I have put it on social media. I have spoken at different places. And the people that inbox me and come to me on, as we say, on the low and say, hey, man, I need to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, that right there lets me know that wives are calling me and said, thank you for speaking out about your mental illness. My husband said, because you're talking about it, he feel like he can go and get help. So it's like, this is not about me. This is about helping others to kill that stigma. They say, look, if Verna can get up here and talk about it, he got PTSD and still have a functional life and be real with his issues, then I can go and seek help too. I'm not bragging. I'm all that, but I have helped so many people seek help that it has been beneficial to my life. And that keeps me on the track of my recovery. It's like, people count on me to be real. So I can't sit up here and fake it and be like, well, I'm not going to go and talk to nobody today because I don't feel like it. No, I have a therapist that I talk to every Friday. We have group therapy and it helps. Mm-hmm. It helps because there's a lot of things that this is what I don't want people to get caught up in. Okay. PTSD is not just a military disorder. PTSD is happening every day. It's called post-traumatic stress disorder. Ain't none in their military. It said post-traumatic. So trauma is trauma, whether you receive it from in the school because they shooting, whether you receive it in the military, whether you receive it because somebody done ran into you. Trauma is trauma. So if we can get people to say this is not just a military disorder, then people can say, you know what? I don't have to feel ashamed by going and talking to somebody about what happened to me when I was growing up because I didn't go to war or I didn't go in the military. No, it's not a military disorder. So any chance I can get to break that stigma, I will.
I really love this mission and we're all really going through it together. They call it collective trauma, especially with this pandemic
That's right.
the last couple of years. And
that's right.
Trauma touches. Go ahead.
And can you imagine the trauma of people that were stuck in the house with their spouse for a whole year? That's trauma. I did not know so much trauma could be stuck in the house with my wife. I'm like, Lord have mercy. There's nothing else to clean, woman. Nothing else to clean. Why are you still clean? That was trauma for me.
Testing relationships all over the world.
Yes. And I'm sure it was trauma for her too. It ain't just.
Yeah, that would be interesting how she would answer that.
Yes.
I know. It's so true, though. People need help. We all, and we need each other.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. We need somebody that we can talk to. And the main reason people don't want to really, I think, open up because people are not being real about what they're going through, or we try to fix them. You know, I don't know if I'm bringing up this question too early, but I am a certified peer recovery specialist. Now, I don't work in that field. I went to get that. I went to get that certification. So I will understand that. And I let people know I'm not here to be a therapist because I'm not licensed. I'm just medicated. You know what I'm saying? So don't. I'm not licensed. I'm just medicated. But my goal is to gain their trust and then give them to resources. I wanted to learn more about the resources that are out there. I already knew what was out there for military. What was out there for the civilian sector in case someone came to me and asked me about, you know, how can I get help? I will have those resources to send them to. And that's all I want to do. I want to gain their trust and then send them to the resources.
I like that. How do you become a certified peer recovery specialist? Well, what did you have to go through to get that?
It's a course that you go through with the state of Virginia. It's taught by other certified peer recovery specialists. And it was just great knowledge. I found it from a friend of mine who found me from the mental health arena. And she told me that she was going to be a peer recovery specialist. I'm like, peer recovery specialist? That'd be nice. So then I went to the course, and it's a 5-week course, a 5 or 6 week course. I can't remember. And then you take a test. You know, you take a test with the state of Virginia and you pass it. And it's not if you think you're going to go and be a peer recovery specialist because you're going to get rich. No. Peer recovery specialist is a mission. It's people who are in their recovery from whatever they went through, either substance abuse, mental health, but you have been in your recovery for at least a year and you are doing well. So they have different organizations they call the community service boards that people actually, peer recovery specialists, work at. Now, I had to leave my government job because things in my mind was not going right. So me going back to a 9-to-5 is not going to work. I had me and my wife, we had come to an agreement. I can't do that now. So what I do is my job is full-time comedy, and I speak at organizations about PTSD, the effect, and how laughter can benefit you in your recovery.
And also, as a peer recovery specialist, right? So is that part of your presentation when you do life therapy sessions, or is it an extension of what you do?
No, it's just an extension. I just wanted to get some more knowledge of how to help.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to get more knowledge of how to help. So, I mean, it looks good behind my name, you know, certified peer recovery specialist, because I do know the steps and how to get people into, you know, treatment that they might need and stuff like that. Yeah, but as far as working in that field at a job, no, we ain't gonna do that right now. I get up in the morning one morning, I ain't going nowhere. You know, when you're in the military for 20 years and they done told you all your life where you're going, what you're gonna do, how long you're gonna stay, when you can come back from Iraq. You know, I ain't can't nobody tell me too much.
Freedom.
I can't. Freedom. Do it. Let me tell you something. This was so funny. When I retired from the military, I went to One Life Fitness and I was working out. I was riding the bike. I was in the cycling class and I was getting tired. And the lady was like, come on, you can do it. Don't stop. And something clicked in my mind. You are not in the military no more. You don't have to listen to what. I got up off that bike and walked out that class. It felt so refreshing to be able to say, I don't have to do this if I don't want to. So, yeah. The military has trained us to, you can't stop, push through it. I don't care how hard it hurts, keep going. But now I can stop.
And he won't push through nothing. that's great. I have a question. I'm still curious about this peer recovery specialist. Mm-hmm. I don't even understand. How would someone know they need a peer recovery specialist and how would they find one? Well, like, what would be a good match for someone who needs those services or need to speak to someone like you? How would they know?
Right. There's organizations like NAMI.
Okay.
The National Alliance of Mental Illness. And those type organizations have peer recovery specialists in them. The community, like Norfolk has a Norfolk Community Service Boards, mm-hmm. where people who, like, maybe they have been on, they've been to court you know, okay, what I'm saying? And they've been in court on drugs and drug addiction and stuff like that. Then the court will appoint maybe a peer recovery to help them go through their, you know, what they're going through and stuff like that. So it's a plethora of ways. I mean, they even have jobs. You can go and Google LinkedIn or whatever the thing called, I don't know, job search thing, you know, the job search thing, and you can pull up peer recovery specialists. Even the VA has peer recovery specialists, and it's not new, but it's just being heard of a lot now. Okay, it's like the clinicians, okay, the therapists and stuff like that, they can't really get to see everybody. You know what I'm saying? They have a caseload. So if I can say I'm a peer recovery specialist, let me talk to you. Let me show you what the resources that I have that I can give to you and show you what, you know, how to better your life. Look, I've been through this recovery. Listen, I have this mental illness. I understand about you can't remember this. So it's basically to a point where we're the first line of defense of triage.
That's, you know what I'm good. Saying? Like, yes.
And you have to have some type of either mental illness, substance abuse that you have recovered from, and you are you had treatment, now you in recovery, because it's called peer recovery. That means I'm your peer. I've been through the same thing you've been through. I understand your recovery. And when they go through, they give them steps and training that, you know, they need to do to understand how to get through this. And it's very well. It is great. Like I said, the knowledge I learned from just going through the class, you know, because, you know, people tell you, man, you'll be a good peer recovery specialist. But yeah, I don't want to go back to work. I really don't.
You're having too much fun.
I'm not going back to work. My wife told me I'm not doing a 9-to-5 again because, yeah, it's just rough.
Yeah. And it fits the whole freedom theme.
Yeah. 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 I got to have freedom.
You have been blessed to perform for a lot of veteran organizations,
yes,
with your message on breaking the stigma. What has been the most memorable experience you've had so far performing for vets?
Oh, my goodness. Is a couple, but I got to give you a couple. The first one is I did comedy at the spine unit at the VA hospital.
Okay.
Yes. The people that were paralyzed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. And it was different. I mean, they brought a guy in there. He was on the bed. You know, he don't even get out of his bed. But one guy, he had to move, you know, use the thing to move his mouth, to move his chair and stuff like that. And I told the lady, I was like, I think I have jumped into a ram I'm not ready for. I said, I don't know what to say to these guys. I don't want to offend these guys. She said, the one thing she said that was powerful, she said, they have accepted where they are.
Mm.
And that helped me right there. And I'm telling you, to do comedy and really not hear no laughter, you thinking, do they get this? Am I saying something wrong? And it was very, very nerve-wracking. But at the end, it was so rewarding to hear them guys say or write down what they're feeling and thank you for coming. Oh, my God, I needed this. It blew my mind. It blew my mind. So you just have to. And that taught me to, whenever I take the stage, everybody might not get me, but there's somebody out there who need me. And that right there was powerful. And I say the second one is I used to put on comedy shows called Kingdom Comedy, and I partnered with the Wounded Warriors. And I used to have between 50 and 60 warriors and their spouses that would come to the comedy show. And a wife came up to my wife and she was in tears. She said, thank you and your husband for having these comedy shows. I have not seen him laugh in, I know, 6 to 8 months.
Wow.
And that right there, I started crying.
Now, because I understand
because I understand exactly what that veteran was going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But to hear me get on stage and talk about my PTSD, what I go through, my shortcomings, how my wife got to deal with me. When I first started doing this and I talked about PTSD in some of my routines, I had a lady come up and say, I needed to hear you today. Now I understand my brother a little better. That, to me, that's what it's all about. Yes, we laugh. Yes, we had a good time. But when you leave, there's like, you know what? Okay, that's why he might act like, okay. Okay, because really, as a veteran, when you come back and you're diagnosed with a mental illness or something like that, the first thing you think is, man, ain't nobody going to understand me. Can't nobody relate to me. That's why you see a lot of veterans talk to veterans, because like you can relate to me. Mm-hmm. And I had an uncle who went to Vietnam, and when he came back, we used to all call him Shell Shock. You know, he was he's Shell Shock. Oh. So I said to myself, whoa, they're going to start calling me Shell Shock. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So you know what I did? I said it before them. I said, I know y'all think I'm shell shocked. I ain't shell shocked. I have a mental illness, and I explained it to them. So I'm the type of person that I'm going to be open with mine. You know, some other people are not going to be open with this for whatever reason they are, you know, that they have. But I want them to be able to know that they can come to me. I had a lady hit me up in my inbox yesterday. Hey, I have a gentleman on my job. He has PTSD, he told me. And is there any other resources out there that you can have for, maybe you can tell him about? And that's it. That is great therapy for me, that I'm helping somebody, because I still go and get my help.
Yeah. So
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. That's when we make meaning from our own trauma.
Correct.
Is when we still are going through our journey of healing, because I'm on a healing journey from a lot of past trauma myself. So
yes, you have to.
Yes. And then you're a little bit ahead of someone else, right? Mm-hmm. And then they can come to you, and there's something so powerful about being able to look them in the eye and say, I understand.
Stand. That's it. I might not know what you went through, but I understand.
Understand. Yeah.
Because people call, and I got to get this, my daughter going to kill me if I say it, but I'm going to say it because I got to get it trademark. People always say PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder, but I call it processing traumatic situations differently. Mm-hmm. Everybody processes trauma differently. We all trying to get to the same end of recovery, but some people might do it through alcohol. Some mm-hmm. people might do it through drugs. Some people might do it through sexual stuff. So it's like, we all process it differently. You know, you can have people that grew up in the same house with the same parents, but have the same different experiences. And people are like, well, why is she crazy? And, well, not crazy. Well, why is she cutting up? And she, whatever they call us. And she not. And they lived in the same house with the same parents. Trauma is different for every person.
Yeah. And it's so true. Hurting people hurt people.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and we're all really a hot mess at the end of the day. We really are.
Everybody has some type. Yeah. Everybody has some type of mental illness. Some type. I don't care what it is. You just have to understand who you are.
Yes, and what you're dealing with.
And what you're dealing with. There you go.
And have the courage. If you're not ready to be open to accept it, you know, something's, you know, internally not right. You're not feeling well. To just be courage to just open yourself up to accepting it.
That's right.
And getting help. Right. And then the world just starts opening up more and more, and the healing really begins. Yeah.
Correct. You know, I was in denial for a while, because I didn't understand. Because when I first came out in 2006. It really wasn't prevalent like it is now, the PTSD. It was like, you know, you have adjustment disorder, you know, and stuff like that. But I remember my daughter, she's 18, and she's a freshman at Virginia Tech. Let's go Hokies. And
you just couldn't help yourself, could you?
Yeah, I couldn't help it.
I'm going to just say, go Heels.
Okay. And she was like 11 or 12. I heard her say, I'm scared of my daddy. Mm. And that right there cut me. I'm like, I wasn't violent. I wasn't. but I could go from 0 to 100 real quick. So I say, you know what? I need to really, really get a hold of this. I need to really, really get it for the sake of my kids, for the sake of my family. So I even took my kids to speak to my therapist. So my therapist can let them know exactly what's wrong with your dad. It's not you. Because most kids would think,
It was because I
was bad in school, because I didn't make my room, clean my room. Dad is no. So that gave them a better understanding. To this day, there is no walking around on eggshells with my PTSD. If I'm having a moment, my daughter would say, "Daddy, you need to go in the room, either take your pill or lay down or do something. But right now, I'm not dealing with you." You know what I'm saying?
So, good boundaries.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, I have allowed, they know that they can be open with dad and say, "Dad, you ain't had to go to 0 to 100 right then. What is going on?" Mm-hmm. And then I had to check myself, because my wife in the VA, they call her my caregiver. Okay. She's considered my caregiver, but my therapist told me that she's really my partner in recovery.
Oh, I like
that. And that word change was powerful, because when you say somebody's your partner in recovery, that means it's two people and everybody has to do their part. I can't just sit around and be like, "I'm depressed today," or "I don't feel like," no. I'm in this recovery with you. Come on, let's get up. I know you don't feel like walking today, but you need to go walk. You need to do something besides sit here and just be on that phone. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
that changing of those words, real powerful. So, yeah.
Yeah. She's been with you the whole time. How long you been married?
Well, we've been married.
I
met my wife at the Funny Bone.
Oh,
we've been married for 10 years. December the 10th was 10 years.
Well, congratulations.
And, I'm sorry. December the 8th was 10 years. I met her December the 10th. Whew. Lord have mercy.
Glad you fixed that. She'll probably listen.
Yeah, I know. So, what was the question you asked? Oh, okay. There you go. See, and then it came back to me. The crazy thing about this, my wife didn't know anything about the military. She had no reference to military or even dating a military man. So all this was new to her. Going to the VA, going to the mental health appointments. I said, "Girl, you sure know how to pick." But being as though I met her at the Funny Bone, laughter has always been a part of our marriage. Mm. Laughter has, we do not go a day without laughing. I don't care in the mornings if we have, because we don't argue. We have never had an argument. And we've had intense fellowship.
Oh, is that what you call it? Okay. I'm going to have to remember that later on after this podcast when I talk to my husband.
Yeah, no, we'd had a whole lot of intense fellowship.
I've had a lot of intense fellowship this year.
Yes, good gracious. So yeah, so we just always laugh. We try to find something to laugh about. Our kids is hilarious. We do videos. It's just a lot. It's just a lot.
Yeah, the videos. I know. Let's talk about that a little bit. Over the pandemic, when the live shows shut down, but did you do any virtual shows or find other ways to provide some laugh therapy?
Yes, I did virtual shows. Yes, I did. I did a lot of virtual shows, and it makes you test your comedy. It really does, because you know you really can't hear the laughter. You know what I'm saying? Because I used to tell folks, "Could you please mute everybody?" Because I have people talking in my head, and there's other people talking. I can't hear none of them. So I'm trying to shut these people in my head up. So that was like, "Could you please mute?" But yeah, but that was great. That was great. But then when the pandemic, hit, also we were stuck in the house. So me and my wife, we was getting on each other's nerve. Because I had just left my government job 6 months before the pandemic, saying I was going to be a traveling professional comedian. Now I'm a stuck in the house comedian with a woman that's going through menopause. Good gracious.
Woo! That's some timing right there.
I mean, yes, we were snapping at each other. We were snappy. We was, just at it, And out of that also, my wife birthed a business because my wife is OCD. She is OCD to, I mean, it's like, it is sickening sometimes. But she birthed the cleaning business called OCD Cleaning Services.
Perfect.
So she actually, perfect.
Yeah, perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. So that birthed out of that. But there's another thing we had to do. I had to go to my therapist and I was like, me and my wife, we're getting on each other's nerve and I don't know how to fix it. She said, I'm tell you what, I can't fix it. You had to find a way to fix it. So I was like, my goodness. So we started doing the car videos and we just talked about life. We had our kids in it and it went about a minute long, maybe a minute, 30 seconds. But we just talked about so much stuff that the local TV station ran a news story about me doing my car videos. And it's on my YouTube page. They did a segment on me called Making the Mark.
Oh, that's great.
And yeah, it was like somebody told them about it. And they did a news article on it. I was like, wow.
That's pretty great. Are you still doing those videos?
Yeah. Okay. We do them a lot. And I've done them for the Virginia Tech Parents page. You know, I put it in the Parents page for the Virginia Tech and just bring laughter. People like, man, I needed that laugh. Oh, my goodness. I had people tell me, man, I will go and look for your videos. I just needed a laugh. So that's what it's all about. That is my brand. Laugh therapy. I just want people to be able to laugh and be like, for that moment, you might be like, "Whoo, man, I'm glad I saw that dang on video. Now I'm not even gonna go ahead and cuss my boss out. I'm just gonna chill and finish the rest of the day." You know what I'm saying? Just something that can break that monotony.
Yeah, and turn that frown upside down.
There you go.
It's hard to go back to frowning after a nice laugh.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Trust me. I mean, it was crazy because that. Now that I laugh all the time, there's one point in my life I could not laugh, did not laugh, didn't have nothing to laugh about, or at least I thought. There's always something to laugh about. Every time I walk past the mirror, there's always something to laugh about.
What pulled you out of that lowest moment, if you don't mind me asking? Like, what was the turning point for you?
Well, the turning point was me is my pastor, my bishop. I was going through something. I was really at the brink of suicide. I had planned it. I knew I was going to do it.
Wow.
And after service every Sunday, you know, he sits on the side of the altar, you know, if anybody want to come up and talk. So I think this was 2010 or 2009, 2010. I walked up to him. I said, "Sir, I know you don't know me because I just joined and I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what I'm going to do. This is basically my last straw." If he would have said, "Let me pray for you," and then sent me on my way, that would have been the end of it. But what he did was he said, "Stay right here." He didn't go far. He said he went and got two other gentlemen and he said, "Y'all come and take this young man. Listen to what he has to say and get back with me. But listen to what he has to say and don't let him go until you are sure he is okay."
Wow.
That saved my life. Those two gentlemen, I felt for the first time in a long time that I was heard. They didn't come and throw scripture at me. They didn't try to preach to me. They like, "Brother, what's going on? Talk to us." And that's why I do my when I say I want people to gain my trust. I gained their trust. You know, I trusted them. Mm-hmm. And they assured me, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yes, I am good. I just needed somebody to hear me and understand me." But they didn't stop there. They gave me their phone numbers. Mm. You know what I'm saying? They followed up with me that night. You know, I could call them at any time. And that was a start of me feeling like, okay, I'm a part of something. Because when you're in the military, you always a part of something. You know what I'm saying? You're part of a unit. So when you leave the military, sometimes you out here by yourself. You're like, okay, what am I about about that? So that really helped me to come to grips with, okay. And then I started saying, okay, now I know I need help now. I know I need help. Because I moved back home. Okay. When I retired from the military, I moved back home. And when you move back home, you face things that you went through, but you haven't dealt with them because you've been gone for 20 years.
I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you move back home and those lies now become truth. And then you realize, so I wasn't crazy growing up. This really was what was going on. And that starts to mess with you. And then the war and then all that. So it was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a process. You have to process it. Yep.
It takes
process
time.
That trauma. You have to process that trauma. And you have to do the work. And that's and that's what, you know, when you go to therapist, it's work. It's you, it's work. And that's what a lot of people don't want to do because it's pain.
Correct.
It's painful. You know, like I tell people, look, I heard this and I love it. It said, if you cut your arm and you never get it treated, it's going to start pussing up. It's going to start getting infected. It's going to do all that. But if you cut your arm and you get it treated, you still might see that scar. You might say, oh, my goodness, I remember when I cut my arm. But it's healed, man. The scar is still there, but you healed from it. So that's the type of stuff I be trying to think of that, you know what I'm saying? If I don't deal with this, it's going to become an abscess.
That's
and it's
going
to affect other parts of my body. But if I get this part healed, it might not say it's going to go away. I'm going to forget, but I'm healed from it.
Yeah, that is the irony, isn't it? Is that
yes.
we don't want to go face the pain. Or
yes,
we don't.
Yes.
I include myself in that because it took me a while to get to the therapist, too. I've been seeing one for 2 years. But it was that I don't want to go in all that old stuff. I don't want to open up all those old wounds.
Correct. Yes.
And the irony is, I mean, I've even said that I've never felt more at peace my whole life healing from old trauma.
Yes.
And
you will feel at peace.
Yeah.
And this is another thing I tell people. People say, well, I tried one therapist and it didn't work. Okay. How many clubs you done been to and you didn't like? You went to another club. Some of us been married 2-3 times. So you didn't like your first spouse. So you got married again. So, no.
Still working on finding the fit, you know?
Yeah, don't let that be an excuse. Don't let that be an excuse, please.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and that's what the therapists are there to do, is to help you find the tools to process
that. There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that because no one fixed my life.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me the tools to fix my life.
Yes.
And that's why people say, you know, a therapist gave me the tools because the same tools she gave me, she gave to somebody else. Now, if they don't use those tools, no. You have to use the tools that are given to you and that you can fix your life.
I agree with that, too. And I like what you said. It's like if you're not fitting with one therapist, then go find another one. It's not uncommon either.
It's not uncommon.
You're not going to be with every therapist. You know, out there, and you just want to, if it's not feeling right to you, you know, then that's time to close that relationship and find another therapist. And maybe it might take 2 or 3 people before you're like, okay, now this one, I can work with this therapist.
There you go.
They're not going to take it personally. They see it all the time.
That's right.
They know this is true and it's going to be okay. And you're okay.
That's part of life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And that segues into the next question I wanted to ask you. How do you feel your faith has played a role in your life and in your comedy career, given your story too?
Yeah, faith is has been my backbone and always be my backbone. Me and my wife, we're part of the marriage ministry at our church. We love talking about blended families because we our blended family and went through, and I don't know what I would be without faith. You know what I'm saying? I have faith in God. Anybody else can do whatever they do. This is me. I have faith in God. And when things go wrong or that's who I call on, because I have a t-shirt that says I talk to God and a therapist. You know what I'm saying?
Me too.
People think, you know, because, okay, you say you're a Christian, you say you believe, but why you go to a therapist? Because I can talk to God and a therapist. Okay.
God made the therapist.
Come on now. He put it on earth. I mean, you know, if you got a heart problem, then what you going to go to see? You can go see a cardiologist, right? If you got a brain problem, you got a mind problem, go see a therapist.
Yeah.
So my faith is very, very much of who I am. Most of my comedy shows, I do. Well, I go to churches, you know, I do not the chicken place. I do go there, but chicken place too. But most of my I do churches and gospel events. But I am a clean comedian, so I can go anywhere and do comedy. And you know, if I know I'm going to a function that's not, you know, that's not a church, I don't really bring up church jokes. You know what I'm saying? I tailor my jokes to fit the audience I'm going to. Because, you know, people don't want to come. People might be like, I didn't come here to sit in church. Oh, I didn't come to sit in church. I came to hear a comedy show. So I know how to bring those laughs in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And connect with your audience. That's really good.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So faith is everything to me.
I like that. You're also a radio personality for the Jamal Bates Morning Show. How did you get into radio? Yeah. How did you get into radio?
Well, I used to be on a radio show with a friend of mine named Cletus Cassidy. I used to be on a radio show. We had a radio show locally here in Virginia, and it was good. It was good. It ran for 3 years and Cletus got us fired. But, you know, it is what it is.
Oh, Cletus.
It was just a Saturday show. But then I branched out, and me and my wife had a little countdown show in Killeen, Texas. And I couldn't keep that up along with the job. So I was like, look, I'm leaving this alone. So the gentleman still knew that I was a comedian. So there's a gentleman named Jamal Bates. Bates, he tried to have a show. Well, he has a show. And the guy said, you need some type of comic relief on your show. So he connected me and Jamal. First, Jamal was telling me, hey, can you record your segment? I was doing a segment called Something Funny. He said, can you record your segment and then send it in? Because he didn't really know how funny I was. After about, I say, a month, he said, hey, can we start doing these live? So that was October of 2020 when I started doing that. In March of this year, Jamal got a chance to do a morning show, and it's in Augusta, Georgia, Aiken, South Carolina, and Florence, South Carolina, locally. But it plays everywhere on the station's app. And he said, I need you to be on the show. So I'm a permanent co-host because Jamal likes Tom Joyner. Have you heard of Tom Joyner Morning Show?
No, I have not.
What?
I know I haven't lived, I think.
Tom Joyner, J. Anthony Brown, comedian J. Anthony Brown. So it's okay. Like,
oh,
Jamal is Tom Joyner. I'm the comedic person. And then we have another young lady named Ashley who does the news. So we have a well-rounded show, and it's been going on since March 15th.
That's great. So yeah.
Basically, like I said, I'm just up there to give the comic relief something I can do. So it's not like I'm up there, you know, spinning the radio. Nope. I just bring in the funny.
That's good. That's good. If you could interview a famous comedian on that radio show, who would you pick and why?
I would have to be, even though he's gone, it would have to be Bernie Mac.
Ah, I love Bernie Mac.
That is my idol. I learned so much from Bernie Mac as far as stage presence. Bernie Mac says when he get on stage, he wants to grab the people. Mm-hmm. And that's I want to grab you and keep you right here. I love, like, sometimes if I go and do a private show and then, you know, they got people in the background that's talking and putting it, then I start doing my comedy and everything stops and they focus on the stage. I love that. So I learned a lot from Bernie Mac. Now, Bernie Mac say a few choice words. And, whew, if I could get away with it. But my grandma, she gone to heaven, but I know she'll be still.
But she's still watching and listening.
Yes, his facial expressions, his mannerisms, I have it all. People have already told me, man, you sound just like Bernie. So that energy that he has on stage is kind of the same energy I have. I'm not a stand in line. I'm not a stand still behind the mic comedian because it's not that I can't do it. It's because of my anxiety. I have to. Yeah. Because when I get off the stage, I am drenched. I am soaked.
You mean sweat? You're sweating.
Yes. Yeah. I always have to have a change of clothes. It's crazy. I'm telling you, crazy.
We're gonna be blessed to have you. I can't wait. As we wrap up here, can you share with the laughers how they can follow you on social media or otherwise?
Yes, you can follow me on social media at Everything the Laugh Therapist. Okay. On Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, everything is a laugh therapist. Now, don't do Snapchat because it's something about being a therapist and hearing snapping. You know, we ain't no. I mean, being a veteran and snapping don't go together. So I don't do Snapchat. And you can follow me at my website, www.thelaughtherapist.com.
Great. Thank you, Bernard. It truly has been go ahead.
No, I was just saying thank you. I mean, I learned so much about myself today that I didn't know I did all this. Oh my God. I'm gonna tell my wife I want to raise. I want to raise for her being married to me. I want to raise.
Oh, you are amazing. It has been a joy and a blessing for sure. Laughers, we have really great news. You can see Bernard perform live at our kickoff, the 2022 X2 Comedy Series at Court Square Theater on January 29th in Harrisonburg. Having done over 55 events and counting, X2 Comedy provides high quality, clean comedy, PG-13 shows around the Shenandoah Valley. It's been a rough couple of years for all of us, so don't miss this show and go see the Laugh Therapist.
Come on, get some therapy.
Get that therapy and buy your tickets today.
Get it. The ticket price is a copay. All right, so go and get your copay and then come on see the Laugh Therapist.
That's right, because it's $20. That's like a copay.
It's a copay. That's a copay. Come on, get your laugh on.
Get your laugh on.
I know
on.
I'm gonna have a whole lot of Hokies there because I'm gonna put. I'm gonna put it on the Hokie page and tell everybody, come on down to the show.
There are a lot of Hokies here, so that'll be great, which is a great segue into the fact that we have great group discounts available. You just need to contact the theater. So a whole bunch of groups of Hokies all can right. be there. That's right. And we'll be sure to put that event info in the show notes as well. And we will see you there, laughers. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us. And we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye-bye. Enjoy, y'all.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.